Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is March 20th, 2016, and this is episode 105, Possibly Drinky. Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
And Slaggy, I think you have a pretty special declaration for us this week.
Well, I would like to dedicate this episode in memory of Pokemon artist and designer Eric Medel, who tragically lost his life just not too long ago in an accident. So he was only 42. Years old, so you know, definitely sad to hear of his loss, and we'll be sending good vibes to his loved ones.
Yeah, our hearts absolutely go out to his loved ones. All right, well, so this week we're going to be talking about games that have some drinking in them, so buckle in and get ready for that
game boozy.
That would have been a good name for it. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, do you want to get us started?
Yeah, so apparently next month's KuroKuro magazine will start featuring updates about Pokemon Sun and Moon. So
excellent.
The next issue will be out on April 15th, but of course, if we hear any rumors or leaks beforehand, we will make sure to report that to you.
Yeah, and you know, typically KuroKuro leaks end up going around 3 or 4 days before the actual street date of the magazine, so I would say that second week of April, we should start having some Pokemon Sun Moon news.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not too much longer now. We also have word here that Bravely Second End Lair will have costume DLC available as a pre-order bonus at Best Buy in North America.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
We have news that Axiom Verge is coming to the Wii U and Xbox One sometime this year, and also the Vita version of the game is currently, quote, going through certification with Sony.
Awesome. Unquote. You know, this is a heavily original Metroid-inspired Metroidvania. It also has some really weird and cool, like, thematic, like, use glitches to get through the game. It's a really cool game. I didn't love every aspect of it, but I was happy that I played it, and I'm really looking forward to more people getting to play it when it hits Wii U and Xbox One.
Except for Vita.
Well,
none for Gretchen Wieners.
We also have word here that Dead or Alive Extreme 3 will be getting a free-to-play version in Japan early this summer. You know, we're assuming, most of us at least, are assuming that this will sort of have a similar system to what we see in Dead or Alive 5 Last Round's free version, where it was like the base game and it came with one or two characters, no costumes, and you could basically buy all of the other characters and costumes and stages and what have you as add-on DLC to that game. I assume that's what they're going to do with Extreme 3, and I think that's actually a good strategy for them. Plus, you know, I hadn't gotten around to actually, like, ordering a gate copy of this game yet, so for my Japanese account now, I'm just going to wait for the free version and download that.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Speaking of downloads, a new patch was put up for Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and 3DS.
Bringing it up to patch 1.1.5.
And oh boy, are there some changes, and I think we're just going to save most of the discussion about the changes to our... I think we're going to save most of the discussion about the changes for our What's Up, probably, because
yeah, we have spent a fair amount of time with it, and there are some changes. Just to sort of clue you in, though, on the, like, sort of as official as we have notes, generally speaking, Bayonetta, Cloud, Corrin have been nerfed. Duck Hunt, Ganondorf, Greninja, and Kirby have been buffed. And scattered other characters have been nerfed and buffed, including Samus, who, Armored Samus, is practically a completely different character now.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely some exciting stuff going on in the world of Smash balancing right now.
Indeed.
We also have word here, and I'm not sure why this isn't grouped in with the rest of my follow-ups other than I made a boo-boo. Catlateral Damage will be releasing on the PlayStation 4 on March 22nd. Catlateral Damage is a fantastically fun game where you play a little kitty who must knock things onto the floor as often and quickly as you can.
Yeah, I see that deserves its own follow-up instead of just being lumped in with the release dates.
I'm glad you agree.
So we have the latest NPD sales report. The first information we have to share is that Fire Emblem Fates is said to have sold close to 400,000 copies, combining retail and digital versions.
And that includes Birthright, Conquest, and the special edition of Fates.
And Pokemon for Virtual Console topped the eShop chart.
Yeah, in fact, it's actually broken records for Nintendo in terms of like week one sales. It actually broke the previous week one eShop sales record held by Super Smash Bros. For 3DS.
Yeah, and we remember, you know, X and Y did super well for just in general. So, I mean, Pokemon is a record breaker.
We also have some news here coming out from Bungie. They have announced that there's going to be a big spring update for Destiny on April 12th, which is going to add new PvE and PvP content. There was a hint on the blog post which announced this, which is several of, you know, the game's guardians wearing armor from the Prison of Elders PvE arena with new textures applied, indicating that they were like taken versions of the Prison of Elders gear, leading many to speculate that this is probably going to be a refresh of that event. If it is, that will be fantastic. Prison of Elders was a really fun event, and I've actually gotten quite a few keys in recent weeks while playing Destiny that apply to Prison of Elders content that I haven't used because it's like I'm not running Prison of Elders anymore. So if they're bringing it back and it turns out that's why I've been getting all these keys for it for the last couple weeks, that would be awesome.
Excellent. So Miyamoto-san was talking to Time Magazine about the upcoming Star Fox Zero and mentioned that there will be an optional invincible Arwing. And this is basically a mode for anyone who's having trouble so that they can kind of fly through and see the levels, kind of, you know, get used to the layout of the level or maybe skip a certain part. So, you know, maybe not for everybody, but it's nice to see that, you know, in the past couple years, Nintendo, especially things that Miyamoto-san has been heavily involved in, are trying to consider all skill levels in that. So,
and, you know, I think this is a great thing. I've definitely seen a lot of people in the gamer community who have had the, you know, expected responses of get good or LOL concessions for babbies. But like, I continue to think that this is just good design, much like, you know, the white Tanuki suit or the infinite P-Wing or even like new Super Mario Brothers having like the Super Play videos.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of value in having concession made for people with a lower skill level so that you can keep up your level design and know that, you know, I can put this challenge in here that's super hard because people who need an easy mode have one optional. I think it's good game design. I'm really happy that they're going down this route, and I'm increasingly excited for Star Fox Zero.
Yeah.
April 22nd for that one, so that's only like a month away now.
Yep.
We also have word here that another character from Daigazo Band Brothers will be getting a Super Mario Maker Mystery Mushroom. This week, it's Yu Ayasaki, and it's actually going up tomorrow. So by the time you listen to this episode, you can, you know, play as Yu Ayasaki in Super Mario Maker.
You can also play as Toadette, who has a new event course called Advanced Toadette.
That course was made available on March 18th, so by the time you're listening to this, heck, by the time we're recording this, it is available. And last, but certainly not least, on the Mario Maker Mystery Mushroom front, oh, that's a big...
Mario Maker Mystery Mushroom.
Yeah, that was a tongue twister. We have a event course called Mario's Lunch Break, or Mario's Lunch Break. This
Mario.
Is, you may recall, the character Mario in the instructions for yes. Super Mario Maker. She now has a mystery mushroom, so if you want to play as Mario, you know, go check out that course and get at it.
Yeah, so this actually is Mario, or Mashiko as she's known in Japan, and not just some soccer mom who can't pronounce Mario right.
Mario!
We also have word that My Nintendo has launched in Japan effective March 16th. So, you know, this is really exciting, but possibly more exciting is that we're finally getting a look at what some of the rewards are going to be for My Nintendo users. And most exciting for me is that for 1,000 platinum points, you can buy for the 3DS My Nintendo Picross The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
Which is just a Zelda-themed Picross game, which I am super here for, and as far as we know, is not available for purchase in any other way.
And we know how you love your Picross.
I sure do.
Do they have Pikmin Picross? Because that just seems like it must be a thing.
I don't believe Pikmin Cross is a thing yet, but I have to assume they'll Pikmin do one as promo Picross. For Pikmin 4 when it launches.
Pikmin Picross. So...
I would call it Pikmin Cross.
Well, I would call it Pikmin Picross. In other big news, the Japanese release of Miitomo happened on March 17th. So you can actually access that if you have like a Japanese iTunes account or I guess Google Gmail Japan. I don't know how Android really works. Sorry.
Well, Well, there is already, you know, the APK out there, so you can sideload it on your Android phone. It does have a full English mode in the game already. You just have to change the language to English. However, do be aware, we do not yet know in any official capacity if your data from the APK will work in the full version of the game. So it's kind of play at your own risk for now. I know many people who are taking the risk and are playing it. They sort of view the worst case scenario as, I have to start from scratch over again, which is fine. Not for me, but I totally get that some people wouldn't mind doing that. And the early feedback is incredibly positive. It sounds like Miitomo is a ton of fun.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of Miis on photographs and such, so...
Yeah, you know, Apple has a iPhone-related event tomorrow. I'm hoping Miitomo launches tomorrow in North America.
I'd be very happy about that.
Yeah, I cannot wait to get started. We also have word here that the remastered PS4 version of Valkyria Chronicles will be launching in North America on May 17th.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. And Zero Time Dilemma, the newest iteration of the Zero Escape series, will be releasing on 3DS and PlayStation Vita on June 28th in North America. It'll be releasing in Japan 2 days later on June 30th, and it will be followed in all regions by a PC version that will be releasing to Steam sometime after the handheld releases.
That's awesome, because why am I feeling like it was originally not going to get a Japanese release? Because didn't the Zero Escape series do very poorly? And
you know, the Zero Escape series is definitely one I think that's more popular here, but it does definitely have a cult fandom in Japan.
Yeah, I thought the Japanese release had been canceled or something, so...
I don't think it was canceled, but I think that the funding is largely coming from non-Japanese companies, as I recall.
Oh, okay.
We finally have a release date for Enter the Gungeon. This was, of course, the multiplayer shooter that we saw previewed at E3 last year, which was, it's like a top-down shoot 'em up dungeon crawler. So it's sort of meant to be like a combination of like a Smash TV and like a Diablo, which is kind of exactly my speed. It'll be releasing on Steam and PS4 on April 5th, so just a few weeks.
That's great. Way of the Samurai 3 is coming to Windows PC via Steam on March 23rd, so very, very soon. In fact, by the time you're listening to this episode, Mike, most likely.
It'll be a $19.99 release, and for the first week of release, it will be on discounted sale on Steam for $15.99.
Yeah, so if you missed this game during last generation of consoles, you know, here's your chance.
We also have word that Danganronpa 2 will be releasing on PC on April 18th, 2016, via Steam.
And if you've been looking forward to Tales of Link, which is the mobile version of the Tales series from Bandai Namco, then you will be happy to know that you can pre-register for the US release next month on iOS or Android. And if you do that, you will get a free Wild Girl Sophie.
Well, you can actually pre-register now. The game releases next month, so...
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant.
Awesome. Super excited. I like the Tales games. I like the art of this game, so I'm definitely looking forward to this. We also have word that the HD version of Tim Schafer's classic Day of the Tentacle will be releasing on March 22nd, so the day you're listening to this, at least.
Excellent. And we have news that Romancing Saga will release on March 24th in Japan for smartphone and Vita.
Awesome.
Romancing Saga 2, did I say that?
I don't recall, but you did now. Fantastic. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about, or are we on to some news?
I think we're on to some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god. News.
All right. First of all, this is one that is very, very, very exciting to me. Amazon Japan will now be shipping game sales internationally. So, you know, if you, like me, like to import a lot of games and you want to leverage Amazon's amazing and fast delivery system, you can start ordering games direct from Amazon Japan.
Oh, good. That means you don't even have to deal with Splasia anymore.
Yeah, you know, and something that's really... there are two aspects to this. The first, of course, is that you will have to make a new account to use Amazon Japan. They do accept American credit cards, though, so it's really just a matter of making a second Amazon account if you already have a North American Amazon account. The second, though, is that due to Amazon being Amazon, you don't really need Prime. Like, I ordered something from Amazon Japan last week, and it arrived like 4 days later,
which is
by far the fastest I've ever gotten anything I've ever imported. And everyone on GAF and online on Twitter and stuff, everyone is just said that they've had very similar delivery times. Apparently, Amazon Japan doesn't have to deal with customs the same way that other sites do.
Oh.
And as a result, stuff comes blazingly fast.
Well, I'm glad that you got your special Flabébé edition of the 3DS. Just kidding, that's not a thing.
So yeah, this is super exciting stuff. Obviously, you're buying direct from Amazon Japan, so you're paying the Japanese price for stuff with no markup, which is beautiful. Games do tend to be a little more expensive in Japan than they are here, but again, if you're used to paying for import markup, then that, you're not even going to notice that. It's still going to be like a discount. So very, very exciting stuff here, and I'm super excited about it, and basically every other importer I know is as well.
Yeah, that's super good news. We also have news that the next Trails in the Sky game is going to be coming to North America, according to Xseed, and that's due out in 2017 for PC.
You know, that is super exciting. I know some people have been complaining that it won't be releasing on the PSP or Vita.
It's 2016.
It'll be 2017 when
it'll
releases.
It'll be 2017.
Yeah, it's, you know, I agree, obviously, that to some degree, like, if you played the first two Trails games on PSP or Vita, you'd want to continue that for the third one. At the same time, it is commercial suicide to launch on those platforms in 2016, much less how it will look in 2017. So
yeah,
I don't blame them at all, and I'm just happy we're going to get it.
That's true.
We also have the announcement of a new Hearthstone expansion. This one is called Whispers of the Old Gods, and it actually is going to be kind of a strange new world for the game. It's going to add 134 cards, and the first time you get a pack of Whispers of the Old Gods, you're guaranteed to be getting an Old God card.
Oh, wow.
So it's definitely, we're going to see some power creep coming here, and I think it's really cool that, you know, they're basically, everyone is going to get something out of this expansion if you participate. Something that's really interesting is that they are going to be offering a special 50-card pack bundle if you pre-purchase Whispers of the Old Gods card packs.
Ooh.
The 50-pack bundle will be $50.
Oh,
you're
wow.
only allowed to buy one per account, but you're basically getting those cards at, like, half price. So, for those of you who are super into Hearthstone, you're already planning on buying, you know, Whispers of the Old Gods cards, it might make sense to think about.
Yeah, that's very cool. So, Arc System Works has announced a new game for Japan called Chase Unsolved Cases Division. It is going to be a game for the 3DS eShop directed by Taisuke Kanasaki-san, who you might know from Another Code or Hotel Dusk Room 15.
And this is really exciting, you know, Taisuke Kanasaki-san is obviously like chief staff from Sing, who was a studio. They did Another Code and Hotel Dusk, you know, these sort of book-style adventure games. And this is their return to that genre. Unfortunately, Sing is no longer really a thing, but, you know, through the good graces of Arc System Works, they are returning to their wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Chase, Unsolved Cases Division, will be releasing in Japan sometime this summer.
Indeed.
We also have word here that the Monster Hunter Flash Hunter manga will be releasing in English in North America on April 12th.
Cool. That's good news for Monahan fans.
Indeed.
And Marvelous has announced Fate Xtella for PS4 and Vita. We don't really know much more about that yet, but it has been announced.
You know, it looks to be a combat game, possibly Musou style, based on the screenshots that have run in Famitsu so far. This is obviously the newest iteration of the much-loved Fate series. You're probably familiar with, like, Fate Stay Night and the like.
Unlimited Blade Works.
Well, Unlimited Blade Works is one of the anime series of Fate. Either way, Fate, you know, it's a really cool meta series. There's a lot going on. I'm not into all iterations of it, but the ones I'm into, I'm super into, so I'm hopeful that this will be one of the good ones. We also have word of a new game called Godly Prison Tower Mary Skelter. This will be a PlayStation Vita game, and it's already being described as a Compile Heart game with much less focus on, how do we say, provocative art materials. Unfortunately, you know, it is still a Compile Heart game. There is still some explicit ish content to it. Apparently the arrow elements are being referred to as dark sexy elements. But the game is definitely a lot more adult themed, a lot less sex themed, and everything is sort of like edgy and bloody and gothic and totally my speed. So hopefully the arrow stuff is downplayed the way that they say it is, and I hope this gets a North American release, because I really like the character design, I really like the monster design, and I want to see more.
All right. Unfortunately, the beta for Fantasy Life 2 has been delayed to sometime this spring. You might remember that the game was originally supposed to be out on smartphones
in September of 2015.
The game was originally supposed to be out on smartphones in summer 2015. So, you know, but Level 5 is one of those companies that knows what they're doing, and they would not push out a game if it was not ready. So just please look forward to updates about that.
Yeah, I'm not terribly optimistic of this anymore, but I'm glad they're still trying. You know, fingers crossed. I hope it goes well for them.
Yeah.
We also have word here of a new Pokemon Company iOS game. This one is Pokemon Comm Master. And it appears to be a phone version of that old trading figure game. You may recall there was a Pokemon trading figure game. It played very similar to like HeroClix and those sorts of minis games.
Huh.
The trailer of Pokemon Calm Masters looks very, very, very similar to the gameplay of those trading figures. And in fact, the Pokemon themselves even appear to be on Pokemon trading figures' bases. So that's probably what it is, and I ain't even mad about it. I will go all in.
Cute. Xbox One is getting a limited time price drop to $300.
Oh, much like we saw happen last year.
And then they ended up making it a permanent price drop, so some people got screwed.
That is true.
But if you've been looking for X-Bone and $300 is your right price, then go pick one up. Or wait a little while and it'll probably price drop permanently.
Excellent. Yeah, if you're looking to buy an Xbox One, I think $300 is a fine price for them. I definitely have gotten, you know, $300 of value out of mine. So I definitely think that this is starting to be a good time to jump in on that.
Yeah.
We also have word here of a new Hearthstone hero. This is Lilandrin, who is a cosmetic upgrade for the Paladin class. In order to use Lilandrin, you have to unlock her by leveling a World of Warcraft character to level 20. For people who don't have a WoW sub, that's alright, because you can actually use the free starter edition, which allows you to play the game up to level 20. So, yeah, if you play Hearthstone, you want this character skin, you know, play a little WoW. Unfortunately, the unlock is not retroactive. You'll need to have gotten a character to ding 20 after March 11th. So for people like you and I, Slaggy, we'd have to do this over again.
Well, shit. All those level 70 pluses doing me nothing.
All right.
I mean, literally my lowest alliance is 70, so.
You know, that's all right, though. I was thinking at first when this news broke that, like, oh, man, this is a perfect excuse to play WoW. But since when World of Warcraft Legion launches, I'll probably roll a Demon Hunter. I may just wait for that.
Yeah.
We also have word here of a new game by PopCap. This is being described by Kotaku as Plants vs. Zombies vs. Hearthstone, which, obviously, I'm all about.
Yeah.
The new game is Plants vs. Zombies Heroes, The Lawn of a New Battle. And it's
the
actually
Lawn of a New Battle.
It's actually a turn-based game with like emphasis on card system, like points resource allocation, and, you know, combat strategy. I'm super into that. That sounds like exactly my speed. And it should be released on worldwide on iOS and Android soon. It's already been in test play in various regions.
Aw, that's great. We also have news that cross-network play is coming to the Xbox One. So this, of course, will allow you to cross-play between Xbox One and PC, and there's also an open invitation for other networks to participate as well. They've mentioned that because Rocket League is going to be the first game to make use of this cross-network play.
You know, and that is something that I think is really good. Obviously, the fact that Microsoft has Xbox Live locked down so hard is a big part of why they're not getting as much support from the various MMOs. That has specifically been keyed in as to why Final Fantasy XIV hasn't come to the platform, for example. So fingers crossed that, you know, maybe now that this change has been made, we'll see Microsoft show a little bit of flexibility to some of these online game designers and, you know, get more support for the bone.
Yeah.
So this week was GDC.
AMG GDC.
Right? There was not as much news out of GDC this year as there are in most years.
Kind of a quiet year.
And as a result of that, we opted not to dedicate this entire episode to GDC like we have in previous years. But we still have a handful of articles and news bits we'd like to talk about. The first is that we finally got some release information on PlayStation VR. PlayStation VR is going to launch worldwide in October at a price of 44,980 yen, $399 US. It's like, can you help me with these international prices? I always mix up those symbols.
So that's 399 euros or 349 pounds.
Thank you for that. Of course, you know, this was the price that was announced on March 16th. The bundle that was announced is the VR headset, the extra box processor unit, the cables required, and a set of headphones. You know, obviously that's really exciting. They also showed off some slides showing studios that are producing content for PlayStation VR now. Some of these studios are really exciting. You know, Bandai Namco is listed, Atlas is listed, Arc System Works is listed, Acquire is listed, Capcom, D3, From Software, Grasshopper Manufacture, Gung Ho, Kadokawa,
wow,
Koei Tecmo, Level 5, Marvelous, Sega, Spike Chunsoft, Square Enix, and Konami Digital. And the reason I single out Konami Digital, and those are just the Japanese studios, of course, is that many people, myself included, have long hoped for an eventual VR game of Yu-Gi-Oh! Where, you know, it sort of takes place like the anime, where you're on your little platform, you play a card, and suddenly have like a gigantic beast looming over you fighting your opponent. And this is something a lot of us have wanted for a long time. It's something that Sony dabbled with that Eye of Judgment game, and there are a lot of us that are hoping that that's what Konami is working on. Though we don't have anything at this point to confirm that, it's definitely something we have our fingers crossed for. And if you're interested in some of the North American and European studios that are working on PlayStation VR content, we still have your back. Looking at people like Oddworld Inhabitants, Heavy Iron, High Voltage, Headless Chicken, Harmonix, who obviously is probably going to be doing some version of the Rock Band VR for PlayStation VR, Way Forward, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Truant Pixel, Skybound, Pouncing Kitten, Polytron, 2K, LlamaSoft, Sumo Digital, Zoe Mode, Zen Studios. So just a ton of studios are working on PlayStation VR stuff right now.
Well, it's the next big jam.
Yep. Now, something else that has been announced is that, and this is actually interesting, pre-orders are actually opening on March 22nd, and this is for a PlayStation VR bundle for $500 that will include everything we just discussed, as well as two PlayStation Move controllers and the PlayStation camera. The reason this is important is that the PlayStation camera is pretty much the only way you can use the VR headset. It needs the camera. So if you don't have a camera, you cannot buy the $400 package. You will need a bundle that has a camera. You will also get a copy of VR Worlds, which is being referred to as Sony's Nintendo Land equivalent. So definitely something that you're going to want to look into if you're interested in the idea of PlayStation VR, but you don't have any PlayStation Move controllers or a PlayStation camera. Pre-orders open up Tuesday, March 22nd at 10 a.m. Eastern, and, you know, fingers crossed that it goes well.
Yeah, and Supermassive Games, who you know best probably from Until Dawn, has announced that they're working on their second VR title. This is Tumble VR, which of course is for the PlayStation VR. It is described as a physics puzzler that tries to hone your physical dexterity and mental skills while you work your way through a gauntlet of tests such as building a tower, creating bridges, working out fiendish puzzles, or blowing up towers of blocks.
Excellent. You know, this game sounds like a lot of fun. I'm really excited to play it, and you know, fingers crossed that it turns out well.
Yeah.
Slaggy, I think this was one that you had had an eye on. They did their annual GDC awards, and you were telling me about some of the winners. I was really surprised by some of them.
Yeah, most of the winners were The Witcher 3. That got a lot of love at GDC this year, so...
Well, I see here that, like, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes got the Excellence in Design Award. Oxenfree got the Excellence in Visual Art Award.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's interesting to see what game developers enjoy.
Yeah, I super excited to see so many fantastic you know, games being rewarded. Crypt of the Necrodancer getting best audio, fantastic. Ori and the Blind Forest getting best debut and best visual art. Rocket League getting you know, best design. Life is Strange getting the GDC Audience Award. Hell yes. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And you know, like you had said, Witcher 3 got Game of the Year, which really surprised me, but I've heard Witcher 3 gets so much praise. I haven't gotten super deep into it, but it's clear that I really need to.
Or everyone's just thirsting for the Witcher art, isn't it, Gerard?
I think so.
And, like, there's pictures of him in, like, a hot tub, and, yeah.
We'll talk about this one last, so.
Okay.
We also got the announcement of a new game by Obsidian.
Yes.
This one is a RPG titled Tyranny. Tyranny is going to be a non-linear game set in the world where evil has won. And so you're sort of playing as a character somewhere on the, like, good-evil spectrum, making, you know, morally difficult decisions while trying to save the world. Yeah, I'm excited for this. It sounds really good to me. And it's definitely something that I'm hoping to play when it releases later this year. So keep your eyes open for that.
If you wanted to make games in the style of Crytek, but you couldn't afford it, you don't need to cry anymore, because CryEngine is now adopting a pay-what-you-want model. So this, of course, follows up from Lumberyard, which is the modified version of CryEngine developed by Amazon. And so since Lumberyard, you know, is free, and we've seen Unreal and Unity and, like, a lot of engines now becoming free to use, CryEngine is now allowing you to basically get it for free or make a donation.
Yeah, and, you know, this is really cool. Something that's really awesome is that you can actually decide, like, when you're making your payment, like, who you want the money to go to. And that includes you can allocate up to 70% of the sum of what you're paying for it to Crytek's new Indie Development Fund, which is a grant program where Crytek will basically be paying toward indie projects that are using CryEngine that they feel are really promising. So
yeah,
this is, to me, a slam dunk. Previously, CryEngine was sort of like the last holdout in going, you know, pay what you want or free to use for these tool sets. And I'm really happy that they are making the jump in such spectacular fashion. Really stoked. I think it's a really cool way to handle it, and it definitely has me super hyped for all of the cool-ass CryEngine games we're about to see.
Yeah, I mean, like, it has really, there's never been a better time to get into indie game development.
Absolutely. We also have word here that there will be two new Star Wars VR experiences. The first is coming to the Valve/HTC Vive. This is Trials of Tatooine, and it's a tech demo where you are sort of hanging out on Tatooine as a dogfight rages on overhead, which is pretty exciting. Something that's a little more exciting is that PlayStation VR is going to be getting a VR version of Battlefront. Battlefront, you know, for all of the things you can say about its game design of the new Battlefront, I don't think anyone is saying it isn't a beautiful game that sounds amazing. So playing that in a super immersive VR setup, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
We also had a little bit of controversy at GDC this year. You know, Microsoft threw one of their annual parties, which always happens, but a scant few hours after hosting a Women in Gaming luncheon, their party just happened to have scantily clad dancers who were paid to dance in schoolgirl outfits. So, you know, quite a few people were made very uncomfortable by this, and Microsoft has been falling over backwards trying to apologize for having made this set of choices that led to this.
Yeah.
In fact, even voices from within Microsoft, such as Aaron Greenberg, took to Twitter to chastise the company publicly. So I think this is a good sign, frankly. I think it's good that we have people checking Microsoft, even people within Microsoft saying, hey, we slipped up. This shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, and you know, something kind of gross also happened involving members of the Oculus team, apparently, at the Gay Gaming Professionals meetup, kind of talking about, like, oh, we don't need safe spaces. Hey, I want a drink. Like, and from what I
understand, actually, what he said was that we're beyond the need for safe spaces.
Oh, that's
right. And I point this out because that to me is even more damning, is that this guy thinks the need for safe spaces is done. You know, homophobia and misogyny and transphobia and racism must all apparently to this guy be solved.
Well, then he was like, oh, it's cool. I go to Burning Man. But apparently, the positive thing about this is that the CEO of Oculus opened a direct line of communication about this. So we will follow up on that if there's more development.
Well, a big part of why I'm glad we talked about that is that I have not seen that story get very much press in the games media. And I think it's something worth talking about. Like, you know, we've talked here on the show about why safe spaces are important to us personally as gamers, why we need gaming safe spaces. And so it's kind of really really irritating to see someone who's important over at Oculus, which is a studio, well, you know, studio per se, but a group that I personally have spoken very highly of in the past, whose product I own and am very supportive of, obviously, you know, acting so douchey and just sort of throwing us under the bus, like, oh, we're past the need for that. Like, really, dude, shut your damn mouth and open your ears, because you obviously need to be taught a little history.
Yeah, he needs to shut his mouth and open his eyes, or he's going to be putting up those black sails into the sunset. Not very proud of you.
I see what you did there, man. All right, well, let's wrap up the GDC discussion by pointing you in the direction of the beautiful animated tribute to Satoru Iwata-san. This was put together for GDC and immediately uploaded to the internet after it was shown there publicly. It was made by Rabber, Umfwener, Sean Benson, and braid artist David Hellman, with help from Chris Kohler. We're going to link you to it over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Where you'll also be able to find links to every other news story that we've talked about here on the air.
Do we also need to provide a link to some tissues on Amazon, maybe?
That might be a good idea, because, man, this animation, it made me ugly cry, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even though we've kind of, you know, accepted the passing of Iwata-san, you know, it definitely was just a very emotional tribute.
Absolutely. All right, well, with all that having been said, we also have some unpleasantness in the form of All right, first up here, we have one that I'm personally very disappointed in. Fable Legends has been canceled. And in related news, Lionhead Studios and Press Play Studios are being closed permanently.
That's bullshit.
I'm sorry. Yeah, this is some straight bullshit. You know, Fable Legends has been in closed beta for some number of months.
I was super excited for it.
Obviously,
damn
as
it,
it's
Microsoft.
In closed beta, I haven't talked about it a whole lot, but I was in the beta. And I just want to say the game was actually super good. I'm not going to say any more than that. I think it would still be breaking NDA. It might already be a broken NDA, so sorry about it. But I don't get why you would cancel this game given where it was in development. Like, it was so close to being like a game that you could sell. Like, just a little bit more polish and it would have been like, oh, I'd pay $60 for this. So this is, to me, such a stupid-ass, boneheaded move. I'm super mad about it. Like, I'm trying to keep my language to an acceptable place, and I'm still, like, really struggling right now. Obviously, you know, Lionhead Studios, like, hello, they're, like, one of the all-time great studios in some ways. Maybe not so much for the later Fable games, but obviously they did stuff like Black and White. A lot of people enjoyed the movies. The first Fable, in particular, was super, super good. But also, you know, Press Play Studios is involved in this, and they were responsible for stuff like Max, The Curse of Brotherhood, Max and the Magic Marker. Like, games that were super, super, super well-received. So I am just at an absolute loss here. I can only assume Microsoft figured that too much money had been spent on this project and it would make more sense to shut it down, but, like, they made the wrong call, full tilt.
Mm-hmm.
Super mad about it.
Very disappointing. We also have news that Daybreak has officially canceled EverQuest Next. Basically, in a message to the community from the president of Daybreak, Russell Shanks, more or less just saying that as, you know, development continued, it just, things weren't coming together the way they felt they were, and that, you know, they didn't want to deliver a product that wasn't going to live up to the high standards that EverQuest fans have for, you know, EverQuest 1 and 2.
Yeah, we also have word that Landmark, however, will be releasing. It's apparently going to be launching later this spring, and it's going to be available for $9.99 in US dollars. At this time, they have no plans to make Landmark free to play or include it in the Sony, or I'm sorry, they're not Sony anymore, in the Daybreak All Access plan. So really super sad news. I know a lot of people were super excited for EverQuest Next. A lot of people were also excited for Landmark, and apparently some of the EverQuest Next stuff is already being ported over to Landmark. So,
okay,
if you're interested in this stuff, at least hopping in on Landmark might make sense. But this is super bad news, and I'm totally pouring out a 40 right now.
Yeah.
And last, but certainly not least, we have word that ESPN will no longer be available on the 360 via the ESPN app as of March 23rd, 2016. This really sucks. ESPN was a fantastic second screen option for watching ESPN content.
There's
a
great way.
What was that?
You said ESPN was a fantastic second screen for watching ESPN.
Well, I meant the ESPN app was a fantastic place to get second screen information, get all of your scores on all of the games you're following super quickly. If you just wanted to pull up like a rando player stats or whatever, it was super easy to do so. So this definitely sucks. Obviously, you know, I haven't ported over to using the PlayStation 1, the Xbox One version of the ESPN app yet, but it looks like I'm going to have to, so.
Hey, and I guess the good news is that with Snap, you know, you could have scores on, getting live updates as you're, playing a game or something like that.
Yeah, hook up the cable through the Xbox One and have the ESPN app giving you all of the scores and stat data while having, like, actual games playing on the TV, so it's like you're at a sports bar.
Oh, woo! That'd be cute.
Party!
Or maybe while you're playing iDarb.
While playing iDarb, yeah. That's about it for our Doom and Gloom this week, but we do have some controversial stuff over in...
Controversial.
Oh my god.
All right. The first piece of controversial news we have this week is that the game developer Digital Homicide has filed a $10 million suit against Jim Sterling. Basically, Digital Homicide is accusing Mr. Sterling of assault, libel, and slander. This is obviously something that's fairly unpleasant. Co-founder Robert Romine of Digital Homicide is basically saying that Jim Sterling crossed a line in basically covering every game Digital Homicide has ever released and giving them all negative reviews. Robert Romine posits that he actually has received several like IRL mail like unpleasantries from fans of Jim Sterling who are trolling the studio as a result of Jim Sterling's many videos about them.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, in one case, he received a literal box of poop in the mail.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, this sucks a lot. I super feel for them. But this, to me, is just another page in a much larger dialogue about how people interact with each other and treat each other online. Now, yeah. Digital Homicide, of course, is not a studio that I'm a fan of. I feel like I have to say that so that people don't think I'm like sitting here defending them because of games like The Slaughtering Grounds, which is nonsense. I mean, it's a nonsense game. But at the same time, they don't deserve this. They don't deserve this kind of treatment. However, I don't think Jim Sterling should be held culpable for the way that his fans have responded to Digital Homicide. He made a really funny video about how bad the Slaughtering Grounds is, and I'm just not really sure why this is still ongoing, other than, you know, Digital Homicide has been treated pretty bad by people that aren't Jim Sterling, and they're holding Jim Sterling accountable. It's a complex matter. There's a lot going on around it, but I think it's really important to sort of read what's going on and why, because I can see why on your face you might think, oh, Jim Sterling's responsible. He should have just pulled the negative review. But at the same time, like, no, it's okay to review things negatively. It's not your fault they're internet idiots that are going to mail you a box of poop if their favorite game critic didn't like your game.
Yeah.
Do you want to take this next one, Slaggy?
Yeah, so the Mario Maker controversy about deleting levels still continues. There was a Reddit story that kind of went viral about a Redditor was basically saying that his daughter put together a level called Maria Keikiyoshi. She spent 3 hours putting it together. And so apparently, like, you know, they got a notification that someone gave it a star, and then they're like, oh, let's go check it out. And it was gone.
Yeah. And, you know, Nintendo, all that they have said publicly is that after a fixed period of time, courses with low popularity will be automatically deleted from the server. Man, I really struggled with that sentence.
Mine are probably all gone at this point.
Yeah, right? Mine too. So this is, this is super lame. Obviously, if a game is taken down from the servers, while you can still play it locally, you can't even re-upload it. You would have to make the same stage and completely recreate it, because that stage ID, which doesn't change even when you modify the game, is, like, locked banned on their servers. So
that's
this
crazy.
Is just super stupid. It doesn't make any sense to me, and it's a huge disappointment to me. Like, I don't really think levels should ever be deleted off Mario Maker. Like, I just cannot see the value in deleting stages. Like, disk space is not that expensive anymore. It's 2016.
I mean, unless there was something, like, explicitly harmful.
Yeah, but how harmful could something in Mario Maker even really be?
Like a hateful slur spelled out in coins or something?
You know, I see why that's inappropriate and why it should be banned. At the same time, while those should be removed, I don't know of a way that they could scan for them automatically, unless they have, like, some really good tech.
Oh, no, I don't mean, like, automatic manning. I'm just saying that, you know, it shouldn't just be carte blanche. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting into some maybe I'm getting into controversial First Amendment territory here, but anyway, moving on.
You know, and I don't think you do, and I think you're right that that kind of stuff should be filtered out and removed. I just,
Even the stuff like, please give me stars, like, I mean, I can understand why they, like, ban those.
You know what, though? I don't care. Like, I get why they're banning it to the extent that, like, they don't think it's appropriate, but, like, so what? Some fool wants to beg for likes, yas, and stars. Who cares? That does not ruin my enjoyment of the game at all. What does ruin my enjoyment of the game is when they take one of my stages and delete it because of some stupid ass filter they're applying that really doesn't apply to any of my stages. What is the lesser of evils here? It's sure as hell not being free of seeing stars on your level select stage, is it?
Yeah.
Like, something is not working, and it's making the game harder to enjoy by people who are passionate about it. That's a problem.
Indeed.
All right, we also have word here, and, you know, this is actually part of a news story that we didn't cover. This is that Ikenie to Yuki no Setsuna is finally going to be releasing in North America. Or that is, it's finally been announced for a North American release. It'll be coming this summer under the title I Am Setsuna for the PS4 and PC. Now, you may recall in Japan it released for the PS4 and Vita. Obviously, it's not going to be releasing here in North America on the Vita, and that is because apparently even Square Enix has given up on the Vita in North America. This sucks, obviously, for stuff like Adventures of Mana, which we previously had talked about how, you know, a lot of people are super mad that it's not coming to the Vita in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have Setsuna not coming to the Vita in North America. It's safe to say that, you know, the Vita is pretty much dead in North America. Like, it appears to be pretty much over. If we're not there yet, we're heading there real rapidly.
Yep.
So that super sucks. Obviously, you know, a lot of people have put out online petitions. They're really starting, like, movements online using hashtags and stuff, trying to get Sony Square Enix to reconsider. If anything comes of that, we will keep you posted.
Yep.
And this week we have an unusual Smash segment because we're going to link you here to three different, completely unrelated articles. Kotaku, to me, was really on a roll this week. I saw three articles that I really wanted to point out, and you know, here they are. Just today they published an article called The Canceled Superman Game That Killed a Beloved Game Studio, and this is about a canceled open world Superman game that was being designed as a sequel to Superman Returns in 2008. This was going to be developed by Factor 5, who you're probably familiar with for their work on Star Wars Rogue Squadron series of games. They were, you know, making this Superman game. They put a lot of work into it. Unseen 64 has recently unearthed quite a few videos and in-engine screens of this theoretical Superman game. It looks beautiful. It looks fantastic, which obviously is not that surprising. Factor 5 was always amazing at pulling out visuals. They're the ones that did, like, the compression engine to allow FMV on Nintendo 64 cartridges.
Oh, yeah.
To allow, like, MP3 quality music samples on Nintendo 64 cartridges. These guys are audiovisual wizards. It's a shame that they're heavily linked to their flop game Lair, the PS3 launch game that Sony made them tack on some really haphazard motion controls and make them the default, even though internally when the game was being made, it was just a twin stick game. Yeah, so it's just a whole lot of BS. Anyway, this is just a real fantastic breakdown of what the Superman game would have been like and about how it killed Factor 5. So it's just a really well-researched article. I really enjoyed it. I wanted to point you in the direction of it because that's what we do here on Smash. We also have here a re-review of Civilization V. And this is basically Luke Plunkett at Kotaku talking about how Civilization V plays now in 2016. And the reason why he's doing this is because, obviously, Civilization games change so much over the course of the years after release. Civilization V originally released in 2010.
Oh, wow.
And over the last 6 years, the game has changed completely. Like, it is a very different game.
It really is.
And he ends up reviewing it now in comparison to how it was with, you know, a critical eye. And something that I think is really cool is taking a look at this game as it's changed and effectively reviewing it fresh sort of points out, like, that in the case of Civilization, at least, the game has grown a lot and the problems that were present 6 years ago aren't there anymore. So I think that the idea of doing a re-review of games that have changed so much over time is a fantastic idea. I think this is a home run for Kotaku, and I hope that they continue doing this.
Yeah, I really like, there's a segment of this re-review that he was talking about that the, you know, kind of the aesthetic was very Art Deco, and that helped it to not look super dated 6 years later, you know, because it just kind of has this timeless look, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I totally agree.
Yeah, you know, I still play Civ, and when I do, it's usually Civ 5, and, you know, it's really cool to see someone else talking about it and talking about it removed from its launch to give it, you know, another fair shake. And just in case you were wondering, they actually rate it higher now than they did 6 years ago. So I think that would be expected, but it's still nice to see.
Indeed.
And last, but definitely not least, here was an article on Kotaku written by Patricia Hernandez titled, "Twitch Player, I'm Done Being a Booby Streamer." And it's basically about a game streamer, because, you know, LOL, Let's Play culture, that's a thing, where this girl, or I'm sorry, I should say this woman, who was primarily known for having her breasts on display while playing video games. She has 11,000 subscribers on YouTube, which in the modern age is actually a comparatively low number, has decided that she's not going to display her boobs on her Let's Plays anymore. She's still going to do Let's Plays, but she doesn't want to be all about the boobs. And it's a fantastic article, covers a lot of issues of, like, toxic misogyny that, you know, a lot of women in gaming have to deal with these days, and just about how physically and emotionally draining and straining it can be to be that kind of streamer, and why, you know, we definitely shouldn't be encouraging that. So I thought it was a fantastic read. I was really glad that Kotaku ran this piece, and I definitely wanted to point it out to everyone out there who might be interested in doing pieces in the future. Like, this is something good to look at and take notes on.
Indeed.
All right, well, that about wraps it up for our various news bits and what have you. So let's get started on this discussion. We are going to have our conversation about alcohol in games. I do not anticipate this to be much of a discussion. We sort of went kind of silly here in honor of the St. Patrick's Day celebration. However, you know, while we thought we were going to go full silly, the more we thought about it and read about it, the more we felt like we should probably talk a little bit about the silly stuff and a little bit about a couple of games that have been a little more serious in its handling of alcohol in games. This can be a really difficult topic to deal with, and so I really wanted to issue our first ever GameBuoy trigger warning. At least two of the games here are games that really deal with alcoholism and addiction and the effects and consequences of those things. And, you know, if those are triggers for you, you're probably going to want to fast forward for like 20 minutes. Don't fast forward for 20 minutes, because you'll be like in the middle of another episode of a different show, but, you know, just skip the next 20 minutes of this show.
Yeah.
And I want to start off this discussion with a little news piece here from Kotaku about a St. Patrick's Day event in Mortal Kombat X. In Mortal Kombat X for March 17th, there was a series of leprechaun opponents that would give you special holiday rewards. And, you know, you would also have, like, drunk effects where people are battling and you have, like, a little drunkenness meter and your controls go more and more crazy as you get drunker, and there are some stage hazards that maybe aren't normally there. It was just a really cute idea, and I thought it was really neat that, you know, they took something like St. Patrick's Day, which is like, how do you do a game event on St. Patrick's Day? And no, they did it in a fighting game of all things. So, you know, we're not going to get too serious here about talking about drinking in games. You know, obviously, we could take the roots of drinking in games back to stuff like like Tapper in the arcade, which was obviously before the home port. And the home port was Root Beer Tapper. But originally you were serving up, was it Budweiser beers?
Budweiser, yeah. It was like a sponsored, early example of sponsorship.
Interesting. And yeah, so, you know, that was a game that a lot of people played and enjoyed. And I like it. It's fun-ish. Certainly it was more fun, you know, when I was 8 years old than it is in 2016. But that's neither here nor there. Slaggy, I know, though, you wanted to talk about the way that MMOs and RPGs handle drinking, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to point out a few examples that I think are kind of fun or notable. So the first one would probably be World of Warcraft, just because it's, you know, it's a game I spend a lot of time with. And, you know, one of the things about drinking in World of Warcraft is that it, you know, it actually gives you like a like kind of like loopy screen effect. Like, you know, you get things get blurry. And the controls get kind of wonky. And so, I mean, I always just thought that that was a really fun and silly attention to detail. But then on top of that, they've also, you know, as an MMO, you know, in being part of this bigger world of Azeroth, you know, there's the seasonal events kind of a little bit tying into what you were talking about with Mortal Kombat. They have their yearly Brewfest, which, you know, celebrates drinking. It's kind of like an Oktoberfest. It happens in the fall. So, you know, there's just the whole part of alcohol and brewing and stuff being part of, you know, the culture of this world. And, you know, just kind of, you know, silly. You can race on a ram and try to deliver beer kegs as quickly as possible, and you can get beer goggles, you can get lederhosen, and you can get a year Brew of the Month Club subscription. So just like silly little touches that kind of make, you know, and there's a lot of these events in World of Warcraft, but the fact that there's one centered entirely around this like Oktoberfest motif is just kind of fun and different.
Well, and you even have like a whole class of characters that are centered around drinking, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, one spec of the monk, the brewmasters, and, you know, that of course goes back all the way to, you know, the original Warcraft games with the Pandaren brewmasters. And so in the expansion Mists of Pandaria, there's actually an entire dungeon that's set at the Pandaren brewery. And so, you know, you're fighting like beer sud elementals, and it's just, it's really silly, you know. But overall, you know, the you know, alcohol in World of Warcraft is treated, you know, kind of lighthearted. You know, if you do drink too much, your character will get sick and puke, and, you know, so like it's lighthearted. But I always thought that as, you know, being kind of a fun touch, a funny, a lighthearted take on drinking in games.
What is happening to me? Like, this is the second time World of Warcraft has come up today,
right?
That has made me like, I want to play WoW right now.
You can get some brews. I might have some of my Brew of the Month Club still in my stash if you want some.
Ooh, girl, do you have an active sub? Because I might take you up on that.
I don't.
Boo.
I also, unfortunately, do not have an active sub for Final Fantasy 14, but that's just because of, you know, work commitments and stuff keeping me from being involved in MMO. But anyway, that aside, I wanted to bring up Final Fantasy 14 because, although not quite as large as, you know, being, you know, like a yearly event with Brewfest and WoW, or, you know, the Pandaren Brewmasters and the Brewmaster Monks, there is a quest chain in Final Fantasy 14 in, you know, the Realm Reborn version of it, so 2.0, where you basically have to go all around the world to get the perfect ingredients for a brew. And so you basically, it starts out, you're talking to the bartender Buscaron, who's in one of like the Gridania kind of sub areas. And it's just, it's really fun because, you know, you have to go into all the different elements, get all the different elements of this recipe, you know, doing various quests that take you really all around the world. So I thought it was really cute. And then, you know, when you finally get the brew, he's like, oh, we'll drink this together sometime. So I thought that was just really cute. And he's also my in-game husband, so...
I knew you were going to add that bit.
Another one that I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about is in Mass Effect. There's the Cerise Ice Brandy, and, you know, there's those other drinks, but the Cerise Ice Brandy is the one that is notable to me because it's Dr. Chakwas's favorite drink. And so, without getting too spoilery, there is a possible scene that you can get if you choose to you know, because it's been enough time since Mass Effect 3 has been out, you know.
Yeah, things are very, it's been years. Come on now.
It's very apocalyptic. I can't even say the real word.
Apocalyptic?
Apocalyptic. It's very apocalyptic. And this was a Coke can that I opened, not a beer can, FYI. You know, basically when shit's going down and it looks like it's going to be the Reapers destroying everything forever, you can, as Shepard, opt to share the Cerise Ice brandy, which is, you know, really like just a really fine brandy in the universe of Mass Effect. Like, you know, it's really expensive and, you know, really classy. And, you know, you can share the special moment with Dr. Shockwesson. So I thought that was a notable moment involving drinking in games.
Yeah, and you know, I want to point out that when we were sort of scripting out this episode, well, not scripting out, we don't, you think this is a script, like, no, we would say much better things if we had a script. But when we were plotting out this episode, what we're going to talk about, we did for a little while think about talking about sort of how alcohol's depiction in games has been done, how it's changed, talk about censorship issues and stuff, to cover things like Final Fantasy VI having pubs that are changed to
cafes.
And, you know, that's actually been a fairly common change among many games. That's not just Final Fantasy VI, but, you know, that's a very common change. We opted not to go that route today, but there is a chance that we'll be talking about something like that in the future. So don't, you know, get your hopes up that this is all we're going to talk about this topic. We're definitely gonna consider if there's any value in taking a little bit more of an academic look at the history of alcohol and alcohol censorship in games.
Mm-hmm.
For now, we just want to talk about some notable games that have alcohol and alcohol in them. Alcohol and alcoholism in them.
Yeah.
So you probably know what the next game we're going
to
talk about.
Although, I'm sorry, I have one more to mention.
What's that?
Oh, and just very briefly. So in Read Only Memories, which is the mid-boss graphic adventure game that I talked about last year. So, you know, kind of a little bit personal disclaimer, you know, I am friendly with the people of mid-boss.
Did you kickstart it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I kickstarted it. So, you know, the Stardust is a bar in the town of Neo, San Francisco. It's a, like, pretty important locale. There's some pretty big, you know, story beats that happen there. And the bar menu is really cute. And I think it was a Kickstarter tier. I did not have this particular tier, but I think it was a Kickstarter reward where you can name and create some of the recipes of the beer, or, you know, not just beer, like the different drinks that they serve there. And there's a puzzle, and you know, I understand that this was also true in Snatcher as well, you know, which is very much an homage. Read Only Memories is very much an homage to Snatcher, that there's a certain puzzle that you have to figure out what drink a certain patron at the bar wants in order to, you know, get them to, you know, kind of break the ice, so to speak, and kind of get information on this investigation you're trying to get. So it's just another, you know, it's not like central to the plot, but you know, I think it's a cute touch. And also, as a side note, they mid-boss, kind of in promotion of Read Only Memories, did a little contest where you would make the drink in real life and then like tweet it or whatever. And so I thought that was a cute way to tie in the alcohol of the games to the alcohol IRL.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a really cute little touch. So I would like to talk about, and you know, as you can tell, we obviously both came at this thinking of a handful of games that could, that we would relate to alcohol issues in games. Slaggy's were a little different than mine. I think that I had a misunderstanding of what we were trying to do here, but that's definitely not anyone's fault. And if you could just stick with us for another 10 minutes or so, this is where that trigger warning came into play. The first game I want to talk about here today is Poppo and Yo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Poppo and Yo was a game released on the PlayStation 3 and PC platforms. I don't believe it was released on any of the Microsoft consoles, and I'm not sure why that is, but I wish it had been. This is a really, really beautiful game. It actually was developed and released in the era of Game Buoy, so we have talked about this game before.
Yeah, you might remember me accidentally calling it Poppo EO.
I don't think that was an accident. I think that's what it's called in other territories. But, you know, this was a game that is largely like a puzzle-style game with not action elements, but it's not a puzzle game like a falling block puzzle game. It's more like, you know, you have this monster who rages off and on. on that is just called Monster. And Monster is normally docile, normally a pleasant companion, but does become scary and unpleasant from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why this juxtaposition exists is because the monster really is a stand-in for the creator of the game, Vander Caballero, based on his father, who was an abusive alcoholic. And so, you know, a lot of the puzzles in the game involve, like stacking blocks that you find in the environment in order to create ladders to escape, sometimes like hiding from things. And the game also has like real world and dream world segments where you'll have to interact with like a seemingly everyday object in order to turn the environment around you into like the dream world where anything can happen and where the character is more powerful. It's not hard to understand why what we're really seeing is Mr. Caballero's experiences being translated into game mechanics. Hiding from his abusive, drunk father as a child, you know, stacking things to escape out of the window or what have you, climb into the attic to hide, things like having to retreat to a magical realm of the imagination to mm-hmm. cope with the very real dangers of his life. This game, actually, it's really interesting because Papoño was one of those games where before I knew what it was really about, I was like, oh, this is cute, but it seems really basic. When I ended up playing Papoño, I actually cried. It moved me to tears, really, because it very much feels like catharsis. It playing it feels like you are going through someone else's nightmare. And to know that, in fact, that is what is happening is it's very touching. And for me, Papoño is one of the high marks for me when, like, you talk about games as art.
Yeah.
I include Papoño in that discussion alongside things like Eco or Gone Home or Rez. You know, a lot of these games that I think, like, this is art. This communicates feelings and emotions and experiences in a way that, maybe a book or a movie couldn't possibly. Papoño is just a very impacting experience that I highly recommend anyone who has dealt with abuse in their life, that has dealt with alcoholic family members. I think that there's a lot of catharsis in this experience, and I really highly recommend it. Slaggy, did you have anything to say about Papoño?
No, just that, I mean, I really appreciate that, there are games out there that, you know, deal with these sorts of things, and, you know, sometimes these issues are difficult to, you know, talk about, so to let alone have a game dealing with these issues, I think is really powerful.
Absolutely. I do want to move on. We could honestly do a Papoño episode, practically. There's so much to say about the game, and it's such an amazing experience, but I don't want to do that today. We're supposed to be having a little bit more of a silly fun talk, but again, I didn't want to miss this opportunity to point out to people that do struggle with these issues that this might have a value and a use to you to have this mm-hmm. experience. Another game that I felt like handled the alcoholism aspect of peruse of alcohol is actually Max Payne 3, which I wouldn't have expected to really have like a meaning and a message, but when the game opens after the events of the first two Max Payne games, the titular character Max, you know, he's a mess. He is alcoholic. He is so high on painkillers and alcohol at all times that he's practically stumbling around in all of the game's cinemas. He's having hallucinations, which you obviously have to deal with as a part of the gameplay. And it's actually like a major turning point in the narrative when he decides to give up alcohol and deal with recovery. So I definitely wanted to give a big shout out to Max Payne 3 for that. You know, that's the kind of thing that I feel like we don't see that narrative portrayed very well in entertainment at all, and certainly not in games generally. So I really feel like it's something pretty special that 2K did that, and Rockstar particularly, obviously.
Yeah, and this, you know, so interesting with Rockstar, you think Grand Theft Auto, gonna have a couple beers, go to the prostitute or whatever, you know. So well done, Rockstar.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about Narc. And Narc is a funny example of a game going out into sort of left field here, but Narc was a game designed by Williams Electronics. It was an arcade game, and it's funny because it's actually considered like the start of the ultra-violent video games boom. And the reason why it was ultra violent is that basically, in order to make this ultra violent game, Williams decided that the targets, the human targets of the players, would be drug offenders, so that you're basically killing and violently shooting people who sell drugs. So it's okay, right? You're a cop. You're shooting drug dealers. It's a little bit of a weird pick, I suppose, for this conversation, but it's really interesting to me the way that Williams used drug offenders, people who are just drunk, whose only crime happens to be drunk, being drunk, which is how it ties into the alcohol theme of the episode, and used that as an excuse to make the first ultra-violent arcade game. Like, no, it's okay. These are just drug users and pushers. We can be as violent to them as we want, and it'll be okay. And crazy enough, it largely was. There was a little bit of controversy over how violent the game was, but not nearly to like a Mortal Kombat level, which, you know, most of you out there listening probably think of Mortal Kombat as the start of ultra-violent arcade games, but, you know, that is not quite the case. Something that's really interesting is that the NES port of NARC was actually developed by Rareware, and Nintendo and, publisher Acclaim Entertainment kind of pushed it as like an anti-drug game that you can buy for your kids. Which is, again, pretty funny. So
yeah,
I just wanted to point out that this game is a thing that exists. It was remade in 2005 for PlayStation 2, PC, and Xbox. There was a GameCube version planned, but it was later canceled. Storyline-wise, it is a straight remake of the original arcade game, but features a bunch of voices and music from, you know, random celebrities and actors. So either way, NARC is kind of like a super surreal gaming experience, and definitely something that is worth learning and reading about. It might not be worth playing, though, because it's nonsense. And the last game I wanted to talk about here is actually the Leisure Suit Larry series. Now, I feel like I'm always talking about Leisure Suit Larry when we're talking about games that do, like, stupid things.
Sleazy.
Well, yeah, so... Leisure Suit Larry, for those of you who don't know, old graphic adventure game for PC, and Apple II. That's how old we're talking about. It's done in the style of, like, the King's Quest games, like, those style of adventure games. And you're basically playing, like, a lame white guy who wants nothing more than to get laid. So, I played this game at a probably much too young age, but something that stuck with me even to today is that, there's, like, a convenience store you can go to. You're going there to buy prophylactics, you know. And you can buy a bottle of wine there. It might have even been a box of wine, because that's how classy Leisure Suit Larry is. And if you take a cab from the convenience store with the wine and go to the casino, I believe it was, you take a taxi, you'll actually get into a car accident because of the wine. Like, you'll, like, I guess, open up the wine in the car and you'll share some with the driver and bam, drunk driving.
Way to go, Larry.
Pretty much way to go, Larry. But I actually think that it's somewhat interesting because, you know, we all think of Leisure Suit Larry as garbage, but, you know, I played this game like 30 years ago, not literally, but like 25 literally, and it has still stuck with me. Like, drunk driving is not a thing you do, because you do not want to be Leisure Suit Larry dying in a taxi with nothing on you but a condom. So
yeah,
I thought that was a really interesting way that having alcohol in this game world was, you know, it was interesting. And there are obviously ways to use the alcohol that do not respond in you dying, which is also a good lesson probably. But either way, silly game, still a lot of fun though, I feel, even though it's problematic as hell in the modern age. Anyway, I think we should probably move on. We are already well into this episode. We still have a Spotlight Princess to do. So, Saigi, what are we talking about for Spotlight Princess this week?
This week, for Spotlight Princess, we are talking about the one and only original 1986 release for the Famicom Disk System, and a year later for the Nintendo Entertainment System, The Legend of Zelda.
Oh, like OG.
The OG Zelda. The original Zelda doesn't even have a number or another title attached to it. You know, I wanted to Spotlight Princess, the original Legend of Zelda, or, you know, Zelda no Densetsu Hyrule Fantasy, or Japan, because, you know, even though we consider it a classic, you know, it started the series that is so beloved, I feel like sometimes it's not appreciated enough. And I mean, maybe I'm just crazy, because, you know, this was a game that sold well over 6 million copies. It was hugely influential in, like, you know, the fantasy adventure genre. And, you know, we continue to see, you know, its elements used even to this day, you know, with especially like with retro games and stuff. Like I said, I feel like because Zelda is just such a huge force, or a triforce, that I feel like sometimes, even though it is very well loved, that it may not be as appreciated. So
so you feel like Zelda is underappreciated. You think, okay, that's valid.
I think the first Zelda is people, you know, typically are like, oh yeah, it's great, it's classic, but you know, they'll always go back to Ocarina of Time or to A Link to the Past or something like that when they're talking about, you know, like, oh, that's the ultimate Zelda game.
So how close are we to just becoming I hate Ocarina of Time buoy? Like, how close are we to that?
I love Ocarina of Time.
All right, well, that's an opinion. Go on.
So just one of the things that I always like to point out that was really cool about the NES release is that it was the first game for NES, the first NES cartridge to have a save function. You know, on Famicom Disk System, obviously saving was no big deal. But I thought that was really kind of cool that this game was so groundbreaking in that way. It had that, you know, internal battery, and you know, you, those of us who played it here in, you know, the West, remember, you know, like, you have to make sure you saved, hold down home and reset at the same time, blah blah blah, you know. So just so that part of it, you know, is just kind of an interesting note of gaming history, I think.
Absolutely.
And you know, the thing that I was talking with you about like the other week when I was actually watching you play Twilight Princess HD, and one of the things that I really appreciate about A Link to the Past, the original Legend of Zelda, is that, I mean, even when you think of something like A Link to the Past, which is why I said that, you know, A Link to the Past has, you know, a lot more text on the screen, like story elements and stuff. The original Legend of Zelda just is purely focused on the adventure, and, you know, for those of us who have played it over and over and over again, you know, at this point we know every bomb location in the overworld, we know every, like, secret shop, or where to blow the whistle, or where to get the moblins that give you money, and heart container locations, all of that, but, you know, for the first time playing it, you're kind of on your own, you know, and I think that's something that's really compelling about it, is that, you know, you're basically relying on kind of your intuition and like the visual communication of the game to kind of guide you throughout the world. And you know, I think that's something that's really I think underappreciated about this game.
I'll give you that one.
And I mean, and even like, you know, oh, if you don't happen to go into this room and find out that Dodongo dislikes smoke, you're gonna have a hell of a time beating Dodongo. And I mean, like, that's something that, you know, these elements of this game, you know, became tropes for the series. Dodongo just like smoke, you use a bomb.
They became tropes for all series, practically.
Right? But
some of them, I mean.
The fact that this was the first time, you know, that these things were happening, and that, like, a game of... I feel like before this, there weren't really too many games of this scope. That, you know, even though it's maybe not a huge overworld, it feels huge. I mean...
In the PC world, there probably were, but I would definitely agree with that statement on consoles.
Yeah, and... And so, I mean, like I said, you're basically just relying on your intuition and kind of learning as you go. Like, oh, a lot of times this involves experimentation. Oh, I can use the boomerang to attack those keys. Or, oh, the pole's voice, I have to use the arrows on because...
You are the only person I know who calls the keys rather than just little bats.
They're called keys.
Yeah, I mean, that is their name. You're just the only person I know who calls them that. Go on, though.
And so, I mean, I think that even though, you know, when we think of Zelda these days, we think of, like, you know, the huge elaborate puzzles, but I mean, even the puzzle elements of the original Legend of Zelda, I mean, even though I wouldn't say they're, like, even quite as puzzly as something like the Lolo games or the Eggerland games, I still think that there's, like, you know, a nice element of puzzle in there. And what I really also like is, you know, just the way that the different treasures from the various dungeons come into play. So, you know, like, there's a certain point where if you don't have the ladder, then you can't get to, you know, past a certain room. And that said, there are some dungeons that you can do in different order. Like, I always save the 6th dungeon for after the 7th dungeon, because the 6th dungeon is really difficult. It's the one that's over near, like, the graveyard, and there's lots of wizrobes. And, you know, and that said, like, that game can be pretty challenging. Like, once you get to, like, the 5th level, especially up in the Lost Hills. Like, I really feel like there's, like, a pretty fair level of challenge. Like, those blue dark nuts and, you know, like, the whiz robes can be pretty deadly. And it's something that's just so easy for me to go back to, because I think being a little bit more of a minimal experience, just owing to it being the first game and being the earliest iteration, makes it just really easy to go through, and I don't have to sit through and watch, you know, King Zora scoot his butt over for 30 seconds, even though I love that.
Well, yeah, you just turn it on, and 5 seconds later, bam, you're in the game, you're playing the game, you're doing stuff. None of the bloat that has popped up in recent years. You don't open up a chest with rupees and it says, hey, you got 50 rupees. You can take these rupees to a store and buy things such as blah, 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 blah.
Right? And I think that that's almost an element that I'd like to see. You know, we've got this whole kind of aura of mystery surrounding Zelda U and how it's supposed to be as revolutionary as Ocarina was in its time. And I almost would like to see a little less hand-holding, you know, and a little bit just more of that encouragement of just go out there and figure out what's going on in the world. And, you know, even like the thing is that even with something like A Link to the Past, which I love that game, you know, A Link to the Past had, oh, there's 3 dungeons and then you go to the Dark World and then there's like, you know, 7 more dungeons or whatever, 6-7 more dungeons.
I think it's 7. I think there's actually 8, but it's 7 and then the 8th.
Right.
Because there's the 7 not princesses, but the cute ladies you have to save or whatever.
I mean, and then that's the trope you see again in Ocarina. It's the trope you see again in Twilight Princess. And with this one, it was just like 8 dungeons, overworld stuff happening, and, you know, like, I just, like I said, I think that I really don't think it's simplicity. When I say simplicity, I mean, you know, compared to, you know, the kind of the elaborate worlds of the, you know, later Zeldas, it's by just letting you control Link, and basically it's you know, it's a very empty Hyrule. You have some old men in caves and some old women in caves and some shops. But otherwise, it's a pretty barren Hyrule. And I mean, I think they even addressed that. Isn't it one of the later ones in the timeline? Because it's like after Ganon has returned in pig form, blah, 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 blah. I mean, like, that being said, like, the lore really hadn't been established either. So it's just kind of like, you know, it really made it feel legendary.
Excellent. All right. Well, fantastic Spotlight Princess Slaggy. Thank you for that.
I just have one more thing to say. I remember it being one of my favorite booklets. You know, we think LOL game booklets, but I mean, it was like, you know, it had a little, like, cartoon, like, not the Zelda cartoon, excuse me, princess, but, like, little cartoon pictures of Link. And then, you know, at least the original run came with a fold-out map of Hyrule, which was just super cool, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, obviously, Keiji Terui-san does not get enough credit for his work on the manual backstory for Legend of Zelda. Obviously, it sets the stage for nerds like us who read the manual, and we're super into the game, because, you know, that's, you have like one screen of scrolling text in the actual game, and that's all the story you're gonna get.
Defeat the Dark Lord Ganon.
Yeah, and even that you can super easily miss. So.
Here are the items used.
Anyway, we're gonna move on. Great Spotlight Princess. We're gonna do at least 2 more of these things. Those of you out there in Internet Radio Land, if you're enjoying Spotlight Princess, please let us know. Obviously, there's more than enough Zelda that we could talk about this stuff for forever, but there are at least 2 more that we gotta get in, so please look forward to them. All right, with all that having been said, we actually do have a rumor I want to talk about a little bit this week.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
So our rumor this week is that apparently, supposedly, according to quite a few sources, Nintendo is funding the Beyond Good and Evil 2, or I'm sorry, the Beyond Good and Evil sequel that Ubisoft has been working on for years, but currently appears to be on the ice. Now, normally we only talk about rumors when we're very, very, very sure that they're going to happen. In this case, you know, we're not strictly that sure of this, but, you know, first off, this is something Nintendo has done multiple times before, saving games that were stuck in limbo.
Bayo 2,
right? Bayo 2, Devil's Third. Like, this is a thing we know Nintendo to do. Further from that, you know, there have been rumblings coming from Ubisoft that this project had recently gotten a jump start after having been on the ice for so long. So this sort of dovetails really neatly, and also it's one of those issues where when so many people are talking about a rumor, it's hard, like, so many different people,
right,
talking about a rumor, it's hard not to start thinking, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And we've seen this happen in many places.
And you know, we can set fire to the rain.
So in this case, I definitely think there might be something behind this. I do not have any factual data. Obviously, I don't know that this is happening, but this is one that hits me and I feel like it has the ring of truth to it. So I'm definitely really interested, looking forward to see if this does come to fruition.
Yeah, so, you know, Nintendo might be turning tables, and I guess once we either have this rumor confirmed or debunked, we'll have to say hello from the other side.
Please stop making Adele references and start talking about what you've been playing lately.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So this was a big what I've been playing this week. So why don't you start us off and get you out of the way, Slaggy?
Rude. Out of the way, like I'm some inconvenience to you? How dare you? No, mine is actually pretty quick.
Right?
Because I've really just been spending more time on Pokemon Yellow. And, you know, just like I said, really, I've just been trying to kind of take my time and really appreciate the journey and, you know, not rush through. And I've been enjoying it. And so, you know, I'm about halfway through, but, you know, just not really in any rush. Just trying to, you know, really build a team and, you know, get the time to, you know, make sure they're all leveled up. Because, you know, in the past, I was talking to you just a couple days ago, it might have even been this weekend, that the original Pokemon games were one that by the time I played through them again and again, I could speed run those in like, you know, 12 to 14 hours. But then, you know, I'd end up with like, you know, having like a very small team and then just using the legendary birds at the Elite Four. So I'm really trying to, you know, build a core team, keep them all like around the same level and, you know, just really kind of value my Pokés. So I'm having a really good time with that. And probably going to, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to pick up Red and Blue, but it definitely makes me want to pick up really one of the more modern ones again. Basically anything where I can get a Houndoom. So I'm definitely wanting to, you know, play either one of the Alpha Omegas or XY or something like that after I finish Yellow.
So it sounds like you're feeling like more of a Pokemaniac than you have in some number of years. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I mean, even though, like, you know, I played X and Y, I played Alpha Ruby, Omega Sapphire, and, you know, I always pick up every generation, but I think it's just really, you know, a newfound appreciation, and, you know, it's so easy to get bogged down with, like, 700 new Pokés, but this almost makes me appreciate, like, oh, there's a whole wide world of Pokémon to catch and collect and have different abilities, so, yeah, definitely looking forward to revisiting some other games on the path to Sun and Moon.
Excellent.
And then otherwise, I played a little bit of Smash and Jigglypuff, surprisingly packing a powerful punch and kick. Like, really, like, felt like a lot heavier hitter. Ganondorf really moving way faster than usual, pretty viable. And then Samus, man, Samus just, like you said, feeling like an entirely different character, really can do some serious damage now. And, you know, just a lot of the mechanics that we think of as the way that Samus used to play in Smash 4 just completely feels different. Definitely some welcome nerfs to Corrin. You know, I felt that I didn't feel that, I mean, Cloud, I guess, was a little bit OP. I didn't feel that Bayo was
and Cloud's
OP.
Nerfs were pretty minor compared to like Corrin.
But Corrin, I mean, I was playing with Point Narf, who's also one of the hosts of Table Ladders and Podcast. And it was actually his first time playing Corrin, and he's like, whoa. And I was just like, I could not even get a hit in. So, I mean, that is also because he is a much better player than I am. But, you know, Corrin was really, really difficult to be up against. So,
yeah, Corrin has been, frankly, some crap, bull crap for a long time now. So I'm, you know, I'm really excited that he got nerfed because
or
since
she
he
got
launched,
nerfed, depending on who your Corrin is,
since that DLC got launched, Corrin was basically like a win button. It was like old style Zero Suit Samus level of nonsense. So definitely a deserved nerf.
Was it basically
one
turning into
the
Melee Star Fox thing? Which Corrin can beat the other Corrin.
Well, and I did long-term think that Corrin was going to dominate professional play. And I did think we were going back to, like, it's Fox versus Fox on Final Destination. Let's watch this match play out the exact same way as every other one. So I'm definitely super, super happy for these nerfs.
And I can't wait to hear you talk about one of your favorite characters and what they did to that character.
Well, I don't really know what you're talking about, so why don't you tell me?
It's Duck Hunt.
Oh, so for Duck Hunt, yeah, they apparently made Duck Hunt's side smash more effective. And as I've had fantastic, fantastic success playing as Duck Hunt in the past, particularly with that side smash that I already thought was super OP, this is just like some crazy nonsense.
So if you thought Duck Hunt was a troll, I actually already wait until you play Captain Spike.
Well, yeah, I feel like it's something that should be nerfed. It feels so OP. Like, I would go online and play, you know, I play For Glory when I play online, and, you know, I pick Duck Hunt and people are like, LOL, and then I destroy them. And now after patch, it's like, what? Like, this is like candy from a baby situation right now. So I'm not mad about it, though. I'm
pretty
happy.
Giggling. You're giggling like that Duck Hunt dog.
Yeah, I'm giggling. I'm giggling all the way to hell, I tell ya. So, anyway, I do want to move on, though, with some of the other games that I played this week, because time is coming to a close. So, I played The Division. I'm really struggling with it. As a game, I really was enjoying it. It's basically like Ubi did to, like, Splinter Cell-style games, what Bungie had done for Destiny to, like, Halo-style games. Like, it's that kind of an expansion into the online world, which is neat. The problem is it's wrapped up in all of this super right-wing Tom Clancy rhetoric where, you know, you're killing people of color in hoodies for looting essential supplies after an apocalypse. I'm really struggling with it. It's really unpleasant for me to play, even though, again, mechanically, I think the game is fantastic. Let's see, played a little bit more of Twilight Princess HD. Not as much as I would have liked because it was a busy month, or a busy week, but I've still really been enjoying it. Definitely glad that I've given Twilight Princess another chance. Fire Emblem Fates, I'm just wrapping up Birthright now. That is to say, I'm wrapping up Birthright presently, not I am wrapping up giving birth now. But,
oh boy.
Right? Got all my units married off and saved their kids from their other dimensions and stuff. And it's been super fun. The last game I've been playing has been Pokken Tournament. And, you know, most of the internet is like dying over how amazing Pokken Tournament is. I'm not having that experience. I have admittedly mostly only played single player so far. Because, you know, I'm trying to get everything unlocked. You have to play single player to unlock stuff. And I am finding it so boring and tedious. I have had, like, half of my matches, the opponent has not even damaged me a single time, and I've gotten perfects. It's so easy that it is boring. Like, I would literally probably rather play Chuck Rock than keep doing single player Pokken. And it's really leaving a sour taste in my mouth because it's so easy and it's so boring. And it's like, I'm winning literally every match. This is not fun. So it's definitely something I'm really struggling with right now, especially while everyone is still on the train of how amazing Pokken is, because it only came out like 2 days ago. But I should not be able to turn the game on knowing nothing about the mechanics of the game and immediately clear the first league with no deaths, several perfects, and go right on to like doing like the Master Gym Challenge or whatever of the initial league. Like that's unacceptable to me.
Yeah, and I mean, I do understand that the game is designed to be accessible to newcomers to the fighting game series. But again, I think what you're saying is really valid, because as someone who is, you know, very experienced in fighting games, you should be able to just hop in and challenge A-League if you feel your skill level is ready.
Yeah, but instead I have to sit and grind, like, even easier battles for an hour before I can challenge the...
At least you're getting cute outfits for it.
The top tournament players. I guess, but I'd much rather just unlock all the Pokies and then get to play online. Like, I'm not really loving this whole, like, I have to do all this nonsense if I want to unlock all of the assist Pokemon, which can be important in battle, to unlock all of the selectable Pokemon just to play as. Like, I have to do all this stuff if I want to play the game seriously, and I just don't know that I'll have the endurance to sit through this treadmill forever. Like, it's going to be really tough for me, so.
I'll play through the easier stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, like, feel free. You're not going to lose. You'll definitely get through it, so.
We'll see about that.
Anyway, all right, well, let's move on. Saiki, do we have any social links this week?
Yeah, we have a few Twitter tweets to get caught up on. So the first one is from Your Enzyme insane. I love it when my phone lights up with Twitter notifications telling me GameBuoy.org liked a bunch of stuff. Means a new episode is soon. Aww, and guess what I'm doing right now?
Party.
Real time. You probably just got this, so it's on like a couple day delay. We had a tweet from Monarch Piratica, a.k.a. Sulker, signal boosting the Amazon.co.jp international shipping that we reported on. So, yes, thank you for bringing that to our attention, signal boosting that. Act Deft saying, listening to GameBuoy.org episode...
GameBuoy.org.
Episode 104. I am very excited for Kirby Planet Robobot. Me too.
Yeah, me too.
Lil Daddy's Pizza saying... in regards to our Pokemon Kanto Revisited episode, the bank compatibility for RBY was a game changer that I didn't expect. I'm here for VC releases if they continue that. I'd rather see VC releases for the older games and new games that revisit or reimagine older regions over faithful remakes. That kind of touches into we had asked about on our Facebook, then opened it up to everyone, of course, what you'd like to see in terms of future, you know, retro releases. And Atari Barbie saying same. So, you know, just a lot of sentiment that this is really a smart move. I mean, obviously, on Nintendo's part. But just that also, you know, kind of maybe allowing them to focus their development on, you know, new generations of Poke titles rather than, you know, always having a remastered retro game. Another tweet from Your Enzyme, the last tweet for today, was about us talking about new 3DS. He's saying... saying, I'm also feeling slightly burned by the release of the regular new 3DS. That's the one I wanted, not the XL.
Aw.
Yeah, I mean, now I just have both.
Oh, poor you.
Yeah, I really shouldn't complain. I just need a handsome gentleman caller to be able to share it with. So, not soliciting for handsome gentleman callers, but we do love your feedback.
We do love your feedback.
We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews.
Love them.
We like your Facebook likes.
Like them.
And we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
And, of course, we appreciate your listens over on Stitcher Radio.
Thank you, thank you.
And we really appreciate all of you tuning in. We really appreciate all of you tuning in over on VogNetwork.com.
VogNetwork.com.
If you would like to email us, you can do that at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
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 Please stop doing that.
Oh, excuse me, princess. And, of course, you can check all of our past episodes along with the play at home version, which is, you know, all of the links that we ever discuss at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Captain Spike, speaking of that VOG network, why don't you tell us a little more about them?
All right. Well, we are now being syndicated on VOGNetwork.com. You can find us over there on Tuesday mornings. Please look forward to it. That is also when our episodes and links will go live on our various social media streams.
You and I have on a very GameBuoy.org. You and I have a very different idea of mornings.
You should also check out on VogNetwork.com Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. You should also check out the show on which I appear with Shane Alenko, Ranger Pridecast, where we look at the current season of the Power Rangers meta franchise, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai series upon which those series are based. You should also listen to the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. In non-VOG shows, you should check out Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show, X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. And last but never, ever, ever least, Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, take us a place.
You said last, but then you didn't shout out my show, so I guess I'm going to shout it out. But first, I'd like to shout out to the Hunty Bunch. I'd like to pour out one more 40 for Koopa Club. They did post their last episode up on their feed. So, you know, just again, shout out to Koopa Club, an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. Made their mothers proud. And, you know, just pouring another one out for you. Thanks for all that you brought to the queer gaming podcast community, Koopa Club. And I'd like to also shout out to VG Realness, serving up a dose of video game chit-chat among friends, along with Game Bar.
Resurrection Stone?
Game Bar, the gay video game Prairie Home Companion, and a special treasured part of the Hunty Bunch. My treasure trail leads to the Game Bar.
Oh my.
But I'd like to be led to the treasure trail of La Palanca Podcast, which is the podcast por y para gay gamers Latinoamericanos en Español.
Fantastic.
And then there's just all types of treasure and pleasure over with the Joystick Jockeys. DJ and Ruben are two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them, and are LGBTQ QTs. And one of our strongest allies comes from Nintendo Fun Club, who are your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. I like all of those things.
Me too.
I have a very special new addition to our shoutouts, and they actually have a few episodes up already at this point. This is the Deus Said podcast over at deusaid.com. That's featuring Game Buoy superfans Dan and Crystal, where you can join them as they level up their game development skills and discuss the daily grind along the way on a non-daily schedule. And I, of course, adore those two. They are, you know, some of the most important people in my life, and I really like what they're doing over there, you know, looking at game development side of things. And it's got a very, like, kind of NPR feel to it, you know, just very, you know, kind of like we're listening into a conversation that they're having over coffee or something.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fantastic.
Or over ribs while watching Paradise Kiss. Hint, hint. I would also like to shout out to Anime Buoy, which is your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. You know, that's our new sister show, our sister ship. And if you are into Captain Spike being super bitchy,
I'm not that bitchy.
You're not that bitchy on this show, but you are on Reading is Fundamental, which is the show where myself, along with Captain Spike, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness, serve the tea on what's happening on the latest episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. So season 8 is underway, and some big things happening on this season. So if you're into drag queens, tune in. Other than that, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, which was a project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They closed their doors quite a while back, but we'll forever be pouring out a 40 for them in the Great Fairy Fountain.
All right, well, with all of that having been said, this has been a lovely Sunday afternoon. I hope all of you have enjoyed listening to us even a fraction of as much as we've enjoyed talking to you all. We'll be back in a scant 2 weeks to talk about more fun stuff, but in the meantime, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And let's go with the classic. See you, Space Cowboy.
Cerise Ice Brandy. That's what Space Cowboys drink.
Speaking to your mic for me?
Speaking to your mic for me?
All right, mics are checked and hot.
All right, mics are hot and checked.
Ahoy, mateys. Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast. Wait, do you not usually repeat that?
I repeat it after you say welcome again, our lovely listeners.
Oh, shoot.
Marvelous has announced that they...
First thing here we have is...
Ooh, that's so controversial.
Stay home. Anything before, like, 1. You should also check out, on VogNetwork.com.